Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Friends, welcome back to another episode of the New Evangelicals podcast. All right, on this episode, I have Marcy, who runs the account Black Coffee with White Friends. Her Instagram account's amazing. Her website is so cool. It's beautifully done. And Marcy is a storyteller. Marcy is someone who is trying to bridge the gap and to help people like me better understand the Black experience in America. And honestly, this conversation, it's really her telling her story, and it's powerful and it's beautiful, and it gave me so much to think about. I was so grateful to have Marcy on. So thank you, Marcy, if you're listening to this, for making the time. It means so much. So I hope you all enjoyed this episode and this interview with Marcy. That being said, I want to say, if this is your first time listening, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. If you can give us a rating and a review, either through Apple Podcasts or on YouTube, it's just a huge help to have someone subscribe to our YouTube channel, or to have someone review or rate the podcast. It helps us get seen, helps the word get out there, and I appreciate that. As always, if you want to support the podcast and support the work that we do, you can click on the donation link in our show notes. Good news, friends, we have officially submitted our nonprofit application. So hopefully very soon we'll have that 501c3 status, and that means that all of your donations are tax deductible. All of your money goes right back into New Evangelicals, helping us create our upcoming docuseries called Community Conversations, helping us cover overhead. It helps cover my time. I sincerely appreciate everyone who has given. There's a lot of work here, folks. I, no joke, spend about 30 to 35 hours a week on top of having another full-time job, on top of having a pregnant wife and a family. So this is a lot of work, but I love it. The work is so necessary to do to push the church forward. So want to say thank you to everyone who's donating. And if you're interested in doing that, click on the link. All right, friends. Hey, without further ado, here is my interview with Marcy. I hope you enjoy it. Talk to you all next week. All right, Marcy, excited to have you on the New Evangelicals podcast. Thank you for making time. I think this is going to be a very good conversation.
I'm looking forward to it because I do. I love your feed. So I'm curious and a little bit nervous. I won't lie.
You're nervous. You have 100,000 followers on Instagram. I'm the nervous one here.
Yeah, but I'm an introvert who that just happened to. So that's just makes you really nervous.
No problem. Well, I'll tell you what, let's start here, because your Instagram account and also your website is called Black Coffee with White Friends. That's a great name. I love that. Give us the background to Marcy. Like, what kind of sparked this account? You know, what was in your mind when you said, you know what, I got to start this thing, especially as an introvert, putting yourself out there in the public light, that's a big deal. So give us the background.
Yeah, well, it really starts with college. I'm 52 now, but I'm going to take y'all way back. But
I like it.
When I was in college, I went to Kent State and I was studying writing. And it was the one thing that I knew I could do and I love to do. But at that time, there was no internet. There were no blogs. None of that existed. People didn't have laptops. You went to like a computer lab. And being a writer just wasn't something that was a thing. It was something that happened to a certain few cases. You know, like the Maya Angelous of the world. But it didn't happen to just regular folk. And so I always was trying to think of a backup plan. Like, you know, could I be a lawyer? No, I'm introverted. You know, like there's just so many things that I knew I could never do.
Yeah.
And I struggled in the writing program. It wasn't that I struggled with writing. I struggled with being in groups, reading my work out loud, just presenting and being vulnerable in that kind of a space. It's very difficult because you're face to face and people are talking about your work while you're in the room.
Yeah.
And for me, it wasn't even any criticisms that I was worried about. It was just the whole full light exposure, like just feeling very exposed. And I was writing about these very personal things that happened in my family and stuff like that. And I was the only Black person in that classroom and those classes and those workshops. And so I ended up dropping out of college, my senior year. I think I had 10 credits to go. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And my thinking was, well, if I don't know what I'm going to do with a degree, maybe I don't need a degree. That's not true, children. Get your degree. You need it. But for some reason, I thought I was the first to go off to college in my family, like generations deep. So I was the first. And I kind of just didn't know what that meant, what would be the next step. I panicked. And I think I left for those reasons. And I kind of just wrote privately. I just wrote for myself. And my family would say things like, one day you're going to write about us and you're going to write this great book. And I just kind of was like, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I don't know how to make that happen. So I worked in bookstores and I worked in cool shops. And I moved to Chicago. And for a short time, I was a barista and I worked in the restaurant industry. And I did all these different things that were passions for me, but I kind of just didn't know what to do with the writing. Skipping forward after marriage and then divorce and what that felt like being a church girl is really difficult to walk through.
Yeah.
And especially being a Black church girl who's now a divorced single mom, I felt very scrutinized. And then I was in this group with some women who it was kind of funny. I think they thought they were saving me. I think they were kind of evangelizing me, but I already was a Christian. But I think they just thought, oh, there's this poor like single girl and I look a little younger than my age, especially then. And so I think they thought, oh, there's this poor teen and she just needs help. But I was like 33. I was like a grown.
Right. You're an adult.
Like a grown person. I had a life. And so we all became friends and we started Bible studies together. They came to my place and I ended up marrying one of their brothers who lived in Austin, Texas.
Wow.
It's such a weird story to tell. But anyway, when I moved, he looked for a job here when we were dating and before the wedding, and he couldn't find one. So the decision was to go to Austin. Me and my daughter we get married and we go to Austin. And when I got to Austin, which I love Austin, it was a culture shock because I was coming from Chicago. I was coming from definitely segregated spaces, but still I would see Black people all the time. I would see people from different countries all the time. I would see Hispanic people and Asian people. When I got to Austin, it was just really white. And I remember it was really just boldly Christian. Like I saw so many crosses and so many flags and so many fish on the back of cars, which was very strange to me because I came from this city where I met people who were Muslim and I met people who were atheists and agnostic and Hindu and Buddhist. I met witches. I met like the run of the mill with Chicago. So it was and everyone was fine with everyone, you know. And I met a lot of gay and queer folk. And when I came to Austin, all that ended. None of that integrated living was happening. I was just kind of like this white, this in this white space which I was comfortable with because I'd grown up going to all white schools. And, you know, my campus, Kent State, is a pretty high rate of whiteness there. So I was used to that. But what I wasn't used to is that everyone that I met had the exact same worldview. And it was super conservative for the most part.
Yeah.
And I would hear things about, you know, the country and Jesus and it just kind of, and I wouldn't say anything in these groups, like these Bible studies that I was involved in, because I really didn't know how, I really didn't know how to speak to those things.
Right.
And, you know, I was in a Bible study not even that long ago when someone, we were going around and saying who would we like to have dinner with?
Yeah.
And one of the women said, Thomas Jefferson. Oh, and all I could think is, would I be serving that? Would my people be serving that? Oh,
right.
It was
right.
So bizarre to me.
Right.
And like,
right.
It was just, but it was good because I was learning. What I was learning was that you could earnestly read your Bible every day. These were Bible reading people and come up with a totally different conclusion. And I was bewildered by that. And so.
Yes, yes, yes.
We had our daughter at a small Christian university model classical education school.
Okay.
It's a mouthful. It's a lot. And she was at this school. And one night, and she was the only Black girl in her class.
Okay.
Of two Black students in our whole middle school.
Wow.
Like, that was it, just two. And on the campus, there were maybe three kids in the high school and middle school in the upper levels, and maybe a handful of Black kids who were like in pre-K and in elementary. So not like she was in a sea of whiteness. And I really didn't think anything of it because I thought that's how I grew up. And what I wanted for her is to have the experience of a Christian worldview. That's what I thought I was supposed to want for her.
Yeah.
And I also wanted for her to be with people who wanted to learn. Like I wanted her to feel, because she had been bullied in her school previously, a public school, because she was smart. And I didn't want her to get this idea that smart wasn't worth it. So I was really worried about that. And I wanted her to be the first to graduate from college in my family. So, right. So education was very important in our household. So we get into the school and it seems great, but I'm noticing that, yes, there are other Black children, but I'm the only Black mom in the whole school. Like, I don't know how many families. Let's say over 200 families. I think it's more than that, or, you know, but somewhere around there. It's not, it's a small school, but it's not impossibly small. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So we were at I think she was about to enter into the ninth grade, and we went to the parent night, and I was sat there listening to, you know, all the heads of the departments tell us what to look forward to, what was going to be happening at the high school level of this education. And the history professor announced they were going to be doing slave debates. And I was like, say what now? Like, I was just sat there like, wait, what? Did you say what? Slave debates.
What like, year is this? Like, what year are we talking about here?
Oh, we're talking about this was pre-Trump. So 2013, 2014.
So 8 years ago.
Yeah, like I'm not talking about that long ago. So, yeah.
So we're not talking about like Jim Crow era, technically, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about like, you know, 2013.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I was just kind of like, and they were going to, she said that they were going to have to present both the pros and then they would switch and they'd have to do the cons. So they did both sides. And my husband and I freaked out, of course. And but I was still, I'm a pretty introverted person and I wasn't really sure. I hadn't even been faced with that. I grew up in a small, white middle middle Western town in Ohio, where we were one of the only Black families who integrated this whole school system. And I had never had that happen. Never had an assignment like that. I mean, I had some jacked up assignments and lessons on slavery, but I've never had that. And so I think I reached out to, I had this thing happening to me where I was one of the only Black women that a lot of other white women knew. And so, and when they met another Black woman, Latasha Morrison, who started Be the Bridge while she was in Austin, they were always trying to get us together. And I was always like, well, maybe I'll like her, maybe not. I mean, do you like every white woman that you meet? But it was like this weird thing. But someone had given me her number, her email or her number, and I have met her briefly, like, and I'm like, hi, good to see you. How do you like being Black in Austin? Kind of a way, you know, like it wasn't like this real deep dive, but I was desperate. I went home and I was, you know, like crying and upset. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I am going to, let me do this for a second. You there?
Yeah.
Okay. I am going to reach out to her because I can't, the only way I can explain this is that it, when sometimes when these racist moments happen, when you're a person in Black skin or brown skin or Asian skin, there's this moment where you think, because it's so conditioned, where you wonder if it happened and if it was racist. Like you have this moment where you're just like, am I making too much of this? Am I being, am I being too sensitive? Because we're often told that we're being too sensitive. We're thinking racially, we shouldn't be thinking that way. And also when you add the element of Christ and Christianity and God to it, right? And these are supposed to be your brothers and sisters in Christ. You're particularly cautious before you make any sort of assumption, right? So you own all these feelings in the space and you call up your sister. Well, first I called, I didn't call up my sisters or my family because I was really embarrassed because I was, I knew what they would say. They would go off and be like, get her out of that school. And I was, and I felt like I was letting them down because that was the other thing. Our family was really hopeful for, they were very, we're like, wow, we got a kid at this private school that's this elite university model school and she's really smart, so she has aunties and grandparents who are just rooting for her,
right
and so I didn't want to let them down, so I reached out to Latasha and I just said, hey, in this email, hi, I'm another Black woman in Austin that everyone tells you about, kind of thing, we have some mutual friends, I have a situation. I wondered if you could help me. And I just basically explained to her what happened. And I said, am I being too sensitive? And I didn't think I hear a thing back from her. I did it more as a cathartic exercise for myself. Because I had already answered my question by the time I hit send. Was that, you're going to have to speak up, introvert, and say something. So I ended up, she emailed me back, I think, it couldn't have been 20 minutes later. It wasn't even that long later. And she was like, yes, this is a problem. And I have had several, I have a problem with that school, is what she said. Because it wasn't the first incident that she'd heard about, I don't think, about that school. Or she was familiar with their textbooks and stuff. I never really found out what she meant by that, but for her personally, but as I did more asking questions of the administration, I started to understand this is bigger, deeper. And much more, much more heaven touching earth than I can even understand. Like this is a God thing. This is the thing where Jesus says, to the disciples and they say, why couldn't we cast out the demon? And he says, well, this one, only prayer can, like, it was that kind of a thing. Because when you have educated people who earnestly love God and love theology and are bent on excellence, and we used to hear excellence all the time from the school,
right?
They have a very hard time hearing that they are not excellent. It's very hard to hear that. And so anything that comes back to them is taken as an attack of Satan. You know,
right.
Satan's always attacked the school.
Totally.
Satan's always wanted to take us down. So there was, I did talk to the teacher. My husband and I talked to the head of the history department and the head of the high school, and who the head of the high school had adopted a young Black boy. He's maybe like, I don't know, maybe he was first, second grade, little one, maybe even younger than that. So he was very interested in coming to the table and have this conversation. And we had several conversations 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 and we got a diversity team to talk about the conversations. And I wrote a proposal for what to do with the conversations that we were having, and nothing was done. I think they added some Black books to Black books written by Black people to their summer reading list, but nothing significantly changed. Wow. Not one iota.
Oh my goodness.
And the whole time that this was happening, my husband and I were going back and forth. I would go back and forth to my husband saying, maybe I should write. Maybe I should just go back. Maybe I should do a blog. Maybe I should just take all the stuff that I've written. I was writing my daughter letters and I should put them on a blog. And I was like, and then the next day I go, no, I'm not going to do that. and he's a graphic designer and a letter and a typographer and an amazing one at that. And then the next morning I wake up and I say, I think I need a logo for my blog. And then like by dinner, I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
sounds about right.
We would go back and forth. But then when this happened, what really touched it off was that when Trump was running for office.
Yeah.
I was having conversations with other moms, white moms, who were vilifying Hillary Clinton, which perplexed me. I didn't know what to do with Hillary Clinton, and I didn't know what to do with Trump. I knew what to do with Trump. I did not know what to do with Hillary Clinton.
Right. Yeah.
But I was befuddled as every other Christian from an evangelical upbringing, or Catholic or Protestant, whatever it is that we were all like in a tizzy. Like, yeah. What do we do? How do we vote?
Right.
And one of the women who was supposed to be like the sage prophetic prayer warrior, which I hate that term, the prayer warrior.
Yes.
And she said, because a friend and I were talking after our prayer meeting, because I joined the prayer team. She said to my friend who had said, you know, I just don't know what I'm going to do. I can't vote for him. You know, like she was clear on that. And this woman came and said to me, a Black woman, you know, after my friend had said he's racist, he's misogynistic, she said, well, I'm voting for the unborn babies. And I just went, I just was like, over the racism, over the fact that he's, you know, assaulted women, over all these prayers that you've offered for parents who were facing divorce, and all the times that we sat in this room and we prayed for their marriage, but this man's been divorced 3 times, which for me, it's not a big problem. I've been divorced too, but it was the hypocrisy of it. It was this hypocrisy of this certain sort of sacredness of family. And yet we had this man who did not value family.
Right.
And yet she said that. And I just kind of thought, I'm going to make sure that my daughter knows that I cared about what was happening, if nothing else. I'm going to publish all this because let me tell y'all who aren't there yet. Your 12-year-old, your 13-year-old, I don't care what's going on in the world. They don't want to hear it from you. They don't want to have deep conversations about the things. You get moments of that, and it's glorious when you do. But for the amount of things that were happening at the rapid fire way that they were happening, when you're 13 and you're just trying to get through your school day, the last thing you want to hear in the car is, so let's talk about what the president said or the this candidate said or this what happened to Trayvon or what, you know, like the last thing that they want to hear are these things. So I started writing these letters because my mom died in 2010 and I didn't have her stories. And she died and she had lived through Jim Crow. She had gone through all the, her father was a slave. So like so my grandfather was, I didn't know any of the stories and she left us nothing. And so I didn't want to leave my daughter behind without knowing that these things mattered. And I wanted her to understand my view of Christ compared to what she, what I knew she was getting at school. And it was one of those things where my husband and I went, like there'd be things that would happen and we went, and, you know, like we knew that all these things that we weren't on board with were happening, but we just were like, oh, it's so bad, but it's a really good school and she's safe. That's a terrible word. When you are sacrificing your integrity and your identity for safety, that's those are dangerous waters. And we were doing that. And, you know, I said to a friend, I think it was Kevin Garcia, I said, I will never trust the institution over my intuition ever again. And that's basically what I was doing. I was trusting in this institution that's not just an education, but it's almost like a church because it's Christ-based and it's and we're having prayer teams. It's running itself essentially very much like a church. They even had like, you know, creeds and stuff like that. Like they had this statement of faith, you know, and and so we ended up leaving that school, but I wrote a whole lot about while I was writing to my daughter, I was like, you know, I might as well write what to these white friends, what I feel, the things that I haven't said, the things that I haven't told them, the experiences that they haven't looked at, the way that God shows up in this beautiful Imago Dei way, that God is so diverse as the furthest star, cosmos, black holes. I mean, in all of creation, that kind of a diverse God certainly can't just be white and male and cisgender, right? So that image of God reflected in all these things has to be greater than what we are teaching our kids to protect and uphold, and certainly more than America. So I wanted her to know that there was a God who loved her no matter what. And so I started writing about that. And I wanted my white friends to know that I too possess the Imago Dei and reflect the image of God, and it is good, just as good as their own reflection. So that's where it took off. And then when we did the Instagram, I told my husband I wanted something that looked pretty, because I was like, I want this to be something that's not just about race, but every aspect of me. I love movies and TV and poetry and books and music. And I in another life, I swear, I hope I was a hip hop dancer. Like I wanted all these things to be represented in my feed. So that's what the feed is. It is a random feed of random feelings. My Mockingbird history lessons feed is a lot more just about history, but you know, I don't even know what my next post will be. You know, like I just kind of go with what I'm feeling.
Wow. Well, first let me say thank you for sharing all the details of that story. I took some notes as you were talking, like, okay, I want to come back to this, I want to come back to this. And as you kept going, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, we really could be here forever because I'm not sure how much you've seen in my feed, you know, but like, I'm very, especially right now, really passionate about the Christian nationalism that we're seeing and the racism we're seeing. And we'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, thank you for sharing your story. I mean, it's beautiful. And I do want to say, by the way, and this is true, I'm not kidding you. When I saw your logo on the website, I go, that is a sweet font. Like, I love that font, Black Coffee. Like the way it looks is so elegant. So is that your husband who did that?
That's my husband. And I, you know, he's funny because my daughter laughs because it's a collaboration. I think I might be the worst art director he ever had. Like, I'm constantly asking for things and he's like, no. And,
that's that like spousal relationship though, you know, it's a little bit different. He's like,
no, like I'm like, make it look like a typewriter. He's like, no, God, no.
You know, like, crazy. You
know? Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's brilliant. He really, really is. And
please let him know. It was the first thing I noticed. I go, wow, I've never seen a font like that. It really is. It's awesome. So my hat's off to him. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, okay, wow. So much here. One of my questions that I am, you know, I tell a lot, I'm very honest with my followers and transparent. And as of this recording, I am very deep in this, in like deconstructing my own colonization, meaning I'm just like realizing more and more how whiteness is the center of everything in American culture, especially if you're a white male, how like the privilege you have is like through the roof, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm starting to see it. I still have a long way to go, but like, I'm starting to put pieces together, right? Like, oh, okay, I'm seeing the differences here, right? And that's important, but I'm also, as that's happening, I'm realizing like, wow, like evangelical culture is more white culture than it is even like sound theology. And I think I think we saw that really explode with the 2016 and then the 2020 election when you had a literal insurrection with people waving Jesus banners, right? Then you're like, okay,
exactly.
Something is like, I mean, I thought the alarms were going off crazy in 2016, and now they're just like, you know, the steam is rising, the building is on fire. You know, where do you think in your view and your experience this comes from? Because like you said, you've probably met people like me who are well-intentioned. They don't think about it like that at all. They think they, you know, they're Christians. Mm-hmm. And they want to be Thomas Jefferson. It's like Thomas Jefferson, the guy who not only owned slaves, but cut out parts of the Bible and mocked the resurrection. Like, he's not even a good Christian, even if he didn't own slaves. Like, that's what you want to meet. Where do you think some of this comes from?
You know, I think we all want to belong. And I think it starts there. I think we all want to belong and we all want to feel like our belonging is protected. And so when you're belonging, when you belong to so many places, like literally everywhere that you go, you belong.
Right.
It's really hard to imagine not having that.
Yeah.
And so I think a long time ago when, just getting into the history of it, a long time ago when Black people were suddenly free, which, and when I say suddenly, I mean in air quotes, suddenly free, right? Took forever. But for white people, that felt very aggressive. The Reconstruction Age was very aggressive to them.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, where could they go, right? And still have their sense of belonging not infringed upon, right? And so we get Jim Crow from that. We get all these Black code laws and all this Jim Crow, and we get policing from that. All of that comes out of that. There's this, and the church is just simply always looking for a leader to tell them that they belong. Yeah. And so we have these leaders like Cotton Mather's, we also have Billy Graham, and we have these people who who created a theology
that
basically said, yes, slavery is terrible and it's bad, but it's for the greater good of God, right? It's just for the greater good of God. And yes, segregation is terrible and it's awful and we should definitely be integrated, but white people should be in charge of how that moves and how that works.
Right.
That is the task. So there's this creation of this possession of whiteness that needs to be protected in order to feel like it can belong, because it has belonged literally everywhere. And so it is the one race that when it goes into another space and it's the only one in the space, it changes the whole culture of the room.
Yes.
Like the fact that if we had African people come here to as missionaries to our church to tell us the good news,
right?
They would have to change their culture to fit white culture in order to do it.
That's right.
But that's not the way our missions work.
That's right.
Our missions take our culture with us. White culture goes with it. And that comes from this whole idea that we were going to tame the savage beast. We're going to save the savage beast. Yeah. That slavery would be good for them because they're savage and they're beastly. And even though Christianity came out of the Middle East and Africa, like it came from that, you know, yet the belief was that, well, if they knew God, but really what we're saying is if they knew whiteness.
You're right.
If they knew how to assimilate into whiteness, well, they'll be okay. It'll be better. There wouldn't be wars. But the truth is that whiteness has wars and disease and pandemics. We're living in it right now. And whiteness has debt in its country. But the belief in poverty and all these things, and lack of healthcare and lack of food and food deserts and food famines. But we have this belief that whiteness doesn't, none of that exists within when whiteness is in control.
Yeah.
And so we take our broken system of democracy. Democracy on paper is a beautiful, brilliant thing.
Sure.
But democracy in the hands of people who are self-protective and need power is a very dangerous thing.
Right.
And so what we do is we then take that to China and we take it to Africa and we take it to all these other places and we say, hey, this is how you worship God. And we say yoga's terrible and demonic.
Yeah.
Drums are terrible and demonic. Your clothing isn't modest enough. I know, but this is what they say.
Right.
Dancing is demonic.
Totally right.
When all of these cultures are different expressions of God existing.
Yeah.
And so I think it comes from that. And I honestly don't know if there's one particular point of entry or a million. It's so hard to narrow.
Yeah.
But because I'm just talking about the Black story. I'm just talking about Black history. I'm not talking about Asian history. I'm not talking about queer history. I'm not talking about disabled history.
Right.
But there is a whole, I'm not talking about size because we have that too in the Christian world. Like, you know, that thin is next to godliness and anyone who's not a certain size, that they are obviously not godly and holy. So we have a lot of misconceptions about what the good news is. And I love what Lisa, I don't know if you're familiar with Lisa Sharon Harper.
A little bit, yes.
She wrote this beautiful book called A Very Good Gospel. And I love, she tells the story about how she could never show up on the doorstep of her ancestors who would have been a woman who would have been a house slave, right? Enslaved to a household of whiteness. And she couldn't just show up on the door and say, good news, you're saved. All your sins are forgiven. Mm. And that be enough, you know? Because without justice, without the slave master being also repentant and changing his ways, what would it matter? How could this slave possibly live a changed life in shackles? So we really have this, I think, this earnest belief that there's something here that needs to be protected, because it is. It's a scary thing to open your door to the fact that it really doesn't matter. Every single person who's ever breathed a breath on this earth is a reflection of God.
Right.
And that is too much for us to handle. Now, what we do with that reflection of God is a whole different ballgame.
Right, right.
But we are all reflections of the Imago Dei, and we are all neighbors. And those who choose not to be neighbor is our enemy, and the requirement remains the same, you know, that we are still called to love. So what do we do with that? You know? Yeah.
No, I think that's really.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good. I was even thinking about, at the time of this recording, it's the Afghanistan debacle is unfolding, right? And like the images are just terrible. People throwing their children over the fence. It's horrible.
Right.
And, you know, just thinking about how, you know, America's hands are just all over it, from Reagan arming what became the Taliban, and, you know, just all those different groups. And it's like, you know, if a group came over here and tried to impart their culture into America, you darn believe that the Proud Boys would be doing whatever they would lose their minds, right? This is a takeover.
Yeah.
And it hit me the other day that I'm like, you know, this idea that like we could just export American white democracy to other parts of the world that have they operate by a different cultural set of norms, right? It's like not fair to assume that we have a better model currently than whatever is happening in other countries. And it is, I'm just realizing more and more, like, as these pieces start falling into place, right? It's like, yes, like this, and this history goes back a long way. One of the questions I was thinking about as you were talking is, I'm curious to know, like, what keeps you a committed Christian, right? Because, again, just to be transparent, I think as I've been deconstructing my theology and now deconstructing just the white factor of what I've inherited, I'm trying to like sift through and be like, okay, what's like beautiful and good and true about the Christian faith, and what has just been like white culture given to me of like, no, this is how we have to do it, you know? So like I'm curious for you, what keeps you grounded in the Christian tradition despite obviously it's severe abuse here in the States at times?
Well, for me, I really love the Bible and all its complexity and mystery. Yeah. But I don't love every translation of the Bible. It's also knowing, I don't have the barrier of whiteness to know that. I sometimes think it's a barrier where you're so insulated that there are no other options. And so growing up with otherness in my life all the time, you know, I had a mom who was mentally ill, loved Jesus. I have sisters who have lost children, whose children have died, my niece and my nephew, they love Jesus. I've had a grandfather who was a slave, loved Jesus. So I feel like, and their expression was so different than anything that I experienced while I was in Texas. It didn't come with rules. My grandfather, it's nothing for me to be like, well, of course, there's no such thing as quiet time being the only way to know God. everyone in the world can't read. That can't be the only way to know God. Mm. So I had a grandfather who couldn't read and write. So, but he knew God. Mm. So for me, just as much as I love the Bible, it's really loving people that has kept me. I see so much beauty in people, even though, trust me, I get a lot of really hateful, harmful, toxic comments sometimes on certain posts.
Yeah.
But the majority of what I've experienced is really beautiful, even when it's messy and it's wonky and it's weird and they've said it wrong, you know, or they, you know, but the stumbling forward is really beautiful. And for me, I always, I'm really into this sort of cosmic experience of God too, that keeps me going, that I don't have to just rely on pastors, or that I can actually literally look at what's happening in the cosmic world and say, my gosh, that's God all over, you know? And isn't that amazing? The gravity can have me going for days, you know, just the very fact that we have it
is
absolutely astonishingly miraculous and beautiful and intelligent and glorious and awe-inspiring. So for me, it's really simple things that keep me going. It's my dog. My dog slays me daily. She's just, Richard Rohr, I wrote in The Universal Christ, he dedicated his book to his dog, who he says, who too was Christ to him. We've had guinea pigs, tortoises. My daughter was going to be a scientist at one point, y'all. And we bought all the pets because she's going to be a vet. And then she's majoring in poetry. So yeah, don't do that. So we experience God through all of these animals. Like we just are, books keep me going. People's stories keep me going. I love the fact that I've met so many people who have said, who have really been dealt a really raw deal from the church, and they still insist that they are loved by God. That is enough for me. When Pope Francis came out and said that, you know, basically said that he would not support gay unions and really was hurtful to the gay community, I honestly thought, oh my gosh, am I going to have to stop listening to my Pray As You Go app? I really love that Jesuit community and all these sort of things. And then when J.K. Rowling said what she said about trans people, well, there's several things that she said about the trans community. I was like, oh my gosh, I love Harry Potter. Am I going to have to give up Harry Potter? But I listened to this. I listened to gay people own their faith regardless of that. And it's so striking to me. And so I'm learning from them, and I'm learning from trans people who are just like, I don't really care what the heck J.K. Rowling's talking about. I'm a Hufflepuff. You know, like it's just it astonishes me how much people refuse to allow those who think they have power to have power over their lives. And I feel that way about my own. I'm like, yeah, you have power, but you don't have power over this life. You can't control how I think. You can't control how I pray. You can't control how I worship this God. You will not. You cannot. And you can put all your regulations on your churches. You can put together all your creeds, all your statements of faith. But at the end of the day, this church is not a building.
Right.
This church resides in me, in the heart of you, in the heart of all these people who have said that they love Jesus. And I don't mean that they said the prayer.
Right.
That's nonsense.
Right. Yep.
But that they have decided to say that I believe that what Jesus said is true, that To love God is to love people. I believe that what Allah said is true, that to love God is to love people. Or I believe what the Buddha says is true, to love God is to love people. And it's very strange how all these people are saying the same thing. Mm. And so when someone says namaste to me or bumpsu, I'm just like, yeah, that's God. Mm. So for me, it's not a question of what the church is doing. For me, when I'm calling out white evangelicalism and white Protestantism that's supporting nationalism,
right?
I'm pointing out the institution,
yep,
not the people.
That's right.
At least not directly. Right. But a lot of times what I have is I get this pushback of people being very offended by that, which all I can say is, but you're not offended by the least of these people being literally pulled from the table.
Yep, that's
right. The very table that Jesus came and sat.
Right.
That makes no sense to me.
Right.
So I always think with these people, I'm like, well, there's no one in the Bible that's good enough for them. There's nothing but whores and prostitutes and rebels.
Right.
And adulterers
and drunks
and rapists and drunks.
Right.
There are all these people who are so flawed in the Bible and Jesus' genealogy. All the way from the beginning. Abraham was really not that great of a dude.
Right.
And yet he's the father of all. Mm. And I don't question that. I think, yeah, I want someone who's a little busted up. There's no perfection outside of God and Christ. So for me, I don't have a problem with that, but I worry for people who are excluding so many because I worry that they're not seeing God. They don't see the face of God. They see a single strand of hair at best.
Right.
When there are so many moving parts to this great and glorious being that created us all.
Yeah. No, I think that's spot on. I really wrestle with that, with what you said about like the rise of, you know, Christian nationalism. And I just wonder, like, often, like, what book are you reading? Like, you read Matthew 25, where Jesus is like, you know, talking about a parable of the sheep and the goats, and he's using all these metaphors. And one of them is like, if you don't take care of the poor, like, judgment awaits, right? And we read that, we're like, ah, well, are they, you know, are they drug tested? You know, like, it's like, that's
exactly
what's going on here.
Exactly.
And then you have people who are like, yeah, we have to make hymns to Trump. And you're like, wait, that's not in the Bible. Like, okay, what books?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it was the First Dallas Church that wrote the hymn, Make America Great Again. And sang it for the July 4th service. And you're like, wait a second, guys. I mean, I'm no Bible expert, but if we're going to go through the Gospels, you're not going to see a lot of this. It's very interesting to me to see people that have a very strong verbal language of Christian, right? Jesus, forgiveness, acceptance, love. They sing these worship songs, right? Sean Foyt is touring the U.S. singing these worship songs about how much God loves people. And then he's posing, you know, he's supporting Proud Boys on his platform. He's making crazy, you know, sometimes just straight up racist statements. And you're like, Sean, like, how are you singing these songs about God's unconditional love? And then, like, and then pushing the complete opposite from your platform.
It's
crazy.
It is. It's really crazy. And a lot of it, I think, is not knowing people. I think if your experiences, I always try to think of people's lived experiences, because it's very hard to, I'll use myself as a perfect example. So I grew up in a church that the Black church is very much, I feel anti-gay, as most churches are, right? But in the Black church, it's a whole different ball game, because it's like, it's more like we're on show, and there's that whole thing of trying to prove our worthiness. And so when you're Black and gay in the church, which happens all the time, you keep that silent, right? Mm. There's despair, you would think that we would be the opposite. You would think that we would be full of love and understanding and grace, and understand that love is love, considering the all the laws against mixed race marriage, right?
Totally.
But we're not. We're totally not. And so we're not there yet. We've gotten better, but we're not there yet. So recently, my daughter came out. And it was this funny thing because I had said that it really wasn't my fight, my battle. That was Jen Hatmaker's battle, because I was friends with Jen, but I just met her when all this was happening, when they were taking her books off the shelf. And I remember telling her that my niece was gay and she had died of a heroin overdose. And I was really grateful that she said what she said, but that I personally wasn't sure how to make sense of the scriptures, right?
Right.
And the reason that I wasn't sure how to make sense of it is because it didn't touch my life where I felt like I needed to make sense of it. So I could read it and just let someone else give me the basics of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not affecting my life.
Right.
It's not, right. I'm not needing to dive deep into that. I don't need to then go find the historical context of this. I don't then need to go find the Aramaic of what was said, or the Hebrew of what was said, or the Greek of what was said. Right. I don't have to sit here and process the fact that the word homosexual wasn't even a thing until the 1900s, and yet somehow it's in the Bible.
Right.
I don't have to think about any of that because it's not my thing, right? It's not affecting me. And so it wasn't until my beloved girl told me her story that I was like, okay, now I need to know all the things. And it wasn't even like I had to do this great dive or this great leap. It was so clear, because I had raised, I don't even know how, y'all, she's to me, she's a perfect human being. Like, yeah. I will fight someone on that.
I'm not going to fight you on it. I believe you.
She is this beautiful, loving young woman who loves everyone and, you know, tries really hard to be so accepting of people. And she's funny and she's smart and she's good. She's just inherently good. And so for me, there was no stretch in her, her God loving her. I'd seen how God loved her, right? But, you know, if you don't have that experience, because you're so insulated, you're so gated. Everyone at your church has the same demographic as you do. Or if it's different, it's just socioeconomic and you can throw money at it by putting money in your tithe or just throwing some donations here and there. But until you actually have a life that's full of complicated ideas of what it means to be a human being on this earth.
Yeah.
You will continue to believe that there's a certain way to be a human being on this earth. And so, and then you'll be completely sure that there's a certain way to be a holy human being on this earth. Right. And so when I could see holiness in other people, even people who are atheists and don't believe in God, that's when the blinders come off, because you're experiencing something different. But the thing that the church is really good at, it's really good at keeping us from doing that. It's really good at saying, you know, the shack is evil. Don't read that book.
Right. Right.
It's really good at saying, don't see that movie.
Yep.
That has bad language in it. So you can't watch Do the Right Thing. So you don't know stories. You have no context except the war room and Undefeated or whatever those movies are. You only have that worldview.
Right.
And so you have no other worldview. And so in those movies, guess what? Most of the people are white and there's a couple of Black people and they all believe in Jesus and they all come to the same conclusion in the end. Right. Fireproof. I think that's the other one. Fireproof. So when those are the God's only stories dead. That you have, exactly. God's not dead, but you don't have Poe's
right
to draw upon. And you don't have, what's another one? David Makes Man. And you don't have Parasite. What a glorious movie about human dignity and what it means to be seen and to be accepted, right? When you're told that all these movies are, they're bad and they're unholy and ungodly, and you won't watch them. When you can't watch the new Star Trek series, right? That's right. Amazing, right?
Right? Right.
Because there's queer and gay love in it.
Right.
Right. I think that's the thing. We censor life. We censor human dignity and we censor life so often. And we're given that mandate from the pulpit that we are supposed to only like C.S. Lewis, who was very much a heretic, but for some reason,
I
love him because
he kind of snuck in there.
he's a heretic and a universalist, and yet people who would never read Richard Rohr will just quote C.S. Lewis all day long. And I'm like, are y'all reading the same C.S. Lewis? It's so bizarre to me.
It's funny you say that, because I was just talking to someone the other day and I was making the point that people will go to like a charismatic worship event, have someone prophesy over them. But if you go to a psychic, you're a heretic. I'm like,
exactly.
I'm like, okay, so what we're doing is we're just changing the location and what it looks like. The location, but the same result.
And what it looks like.
Right? Same the same result. I'm going to pray over you. God's given me a word. This is coming your way. You know, I sense opportunity for you. I mean, it's literally like, it is.
Exactly.
It's psychics shit, dare I say that. You know, like, it's just very interesting to me that, like, a lot of people don't, because like you said, because we've been just taught to see things with one particular, very specific lens, right?
Right.
Anything outside of that lens, even if it's the same foundational ingredients, just rearranged the wrong way, problematic. But no.
It's problematic.
If you take the same ingredients and rearrange them in this way and put some white frosting on it, no problem at all, right?
No problem.
And you're totally correct in what you're saying. 100% agree.
Yeah, it's really weird to me how I have friends who their kids could not read Harry Potter or see Harry Potter movies, but they could see Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And I'm just like, Game of Thrones for that matter.
Oh,
and I'm
oh
my gosh, Gandalf is casting out demons just like Harry Potter is. What in the world are you talking about? Voldemort is the same as the Eye of Mordor.
Right.
I mean, it just is really weird to me how we've decided these things. And I had a rebuking from a friend who was warning me against the Shaq movie.
Of course.
And I mustn't see it. And I thought, that's so weird. Why? They hadn't seen it. They hadn't read the book.
Right.
But it was the whole idea that God, and I had read some things about William Paul Evans, I think is his name, the author of that book. And I remember just going, okay, but there's a reason that he wrote this book, the way that he wrote it. His experience was so different than yours. Not having a loving father, actually having a very abusive situation, right? And that you're upset because you're mad because his God is a woman. Like you can't handle that, even though God isn't a gender.
Right.
And if God's a gender, it's definitely they, them.
Right.
Because it's three and one.
And like, I'm sorry to cut you off. Might I add in the Bible, God is referred to as a nursing mother. Lady Wisdom is another name for God in the Bible.
Lady of Wisdom,
So it's not like it's a foreign. It's there.
And and so there's just this censoring that we do.
Yes.
And we miss so much beauty. I mean, and I'm fortunate that I had a mother who was a heretic and very much, into all the things. And so I remember my mother used to do this thing. It used to just horrify us. But on our block, every Saturday, like every, you know, not every Saturday, but it seemed like it. But there would be the Jehovah's Witnesses would come down our block. And you could know they were coming because children would be called inside. Doors would be slammed. Curtains would be drawn. And my mother would literally invite them in, light up a joint, grab her Bible.
I love it.
And have these tete-a-tetes with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And I don't know. I just always just think it's really funny. But then she's also the woman who, like, I was having this conversation with my sister about Bible translations. And she was just like, nope, Mom always said it's the King James Version. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness, our mother was mentally ill and you know it. Why would you believe her? You know?
What a weird intersection, right?
Like, it's this weird. So it's just, I think.
Amazing.
I trust God enough. I trust in the God that I feel that has created this earth and this universe and all the different galaxies. I trust the goodness of that enough that my searching can be messy, maybe even wrong. Mm. But if along the way, my heart's desire is just to love more people, it's never going to be the wrong thing in the end.
Yeah.
And I don't fear, I'm not living towards death. And I think that's another thing in the church. Most of what we do is towards death, towards the ever after. There's not a lot of earth. There's a lot of heaven, 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 heaven.
You're right.
And not enough of here on earth.
Yes.
And it's funny because Jesus's ministry and even the whole of the Old Testament says so very little about heaven.
You're absolutely
right. It's very little focus on that.
Yep.
Everything's in the here and now. Those stories are so very here, so very now.
Yeah.
And yet we spend a lot of time making decisions based on whether or not we're going to get into heaven. Yep. And I think a lot of people just can't believe that God could be that good. And yet the very word gospel is news so good it can't possibly be true. And yet they just can't believe that God could be that good, that God can love this trans Black man or trans Black woman just as much as this white Republican conservative pastor.
Right.
Like that we're so compartmentalized and we're so, we categorize our group so much that we can't believe that there's a God that doesn't do that. Even though the proof is in the very nature of how the world works and the fact that everything is diverse, there is no sameness. And so those two stars are alike.
Yeah, right.
There's a sun and a moon. Like there's all these different planets. They all have different atmospheres. They all have different things going on. Right.
Right.
And yet, we're like so convinced that sameness is the way to go. And so when I think that about this God that's so diverse in expression, a literal just painting of just all kinds of just paint thrown at the canvas and all the media, all the photograph, like all of it, it's this big mosh of creativeness. I'm pretty confident that I can love people in a crazy way and it's going to be okay. It's going to be just fine. Yeah.
Wow. Woo. Okay. Now I need a joint. I don't even smoke, but I'm going to smoke. You know?
I know. Yeah. I grew up, it was so much a part of my childhood that I don't either. But it's funny. Our dog, we got our dog some dog treats that have CBD. And she freaks out when we leave.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And we got her this peanut butter that's doped up too. And it's funny because now whenever we get this peanut butter, she won't take it. Like we have to force her to have it because she's like, I don't know what that is. but I took like an 8-hour nap the last time you did that to me. So, yeah, I don't either, but yeah, my mom would totally, if she were here right now, she's passed, but she would totally be in the background just helping herself. I guarantee you that.
Go for it, Mom. It's all you. So, all right. So honestly, we're already over 1 hour. I can't believe that. Time flies. Do you have time for one more question? One final question?
Of course.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm just kind of curious to get your perspective because, you know, you lived a little bit longer than I have, and you've seen more things than I have, and there's more wisdom there. And, you know, again, I know you can't speak as, you know, maybe an authority on the subject, but again, in your experience, do you find us in America on the right path to kind of, you know, reconciliation truly of racism and repentance? Or do you kind of see things like, you know, getting worse, or hey, it's the same stuff, just rearranged? Like, what are you seeing from then to now kind of thing when it comes to racism in America?
That's a really good question. And honestly, I don't know. Mm. I don't know if we're on the right path or not.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we're on a path. Honestly. But I do see a lot of really good work out there.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people doing things that I never thought I'd see. I never thought I'd see a Black president, even a mixed president. I certainly didn't think I would see a Black president with a wife that was Black, like for real Black.
Right.
Never thought that. I never imagined that white people would rise up like they did for George Floyd. Never would have imagined it. Because when the not so long before that, when the
Unite the Right
thing happened in Charlottesville, it seemed, I remember feeling that it was something that was only happening to me. And all my white friends were just kind of living their life like, oh yeah, that's terrible. But for me, it was devastating. It was devastating. It made me feel small, made me feel scared. It made me feel a whole bunch of things. So much so that we had to take a like weekend vacation because I was so messed up from it.
Yeah.
But I never imagined that I would see the things that I see now. I never envisioned or could have even dreamed of a Stacey Abrams or an Ava DuVernay. None of that in my childhood would have seemed possible. I see more Black people on TV than I've ever seen in my entire life. I have never heard the voice of Asian women come out so strongly after what happened in Houston. Was it Houston?
In
Texas. I think it was Texas with the shootings.
It was the Atlanta shootings.
Atlanta shootings in Georgia, Florida. But you know, like all of that is very hopeful to me.
Yeah, right.
I've never seen so many history books written by Black people, and when I say that, y'all, I'm talking about 4 books. Like there are 4 books that I just never would have imagined would be at the bookstore and people reading it. And yet that's happened. So right now we have 4. My dream is that there just be more representation out there. And I think that if that's the path, then yeah, I think the more represent, I think I'm listening to this really interesting book. I can't think of the name of it, but it's a journalist who says that it's politics is always the last in culture to get the memo, that you usually see things change in movies and then you see a change in politics. Like when you see things changing in culture, politics doesn't change culture as rapidly as we do. And even though I'm saying rapidly, it's still a slow slog for us. Like look how long it took for a Black man to win an Academy Award again, since Sidney Poitier. I mean, we're talking about these incremental steps throughout the years, but I think our awareness has changed the game. We are so much more aware. So much was hidden because didn't have this connected, like you and I having this conversation. It's a miracle. Yeah. It's a miracle.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we have this kind of connectedness is really, really hopeful because otherwise I don't think I would have heard about George Floyd had someone not been there with a cell phone recording it all.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have known all of Trump's corruptness, right?
Yeah.
If there weren't the instant reporting of these things.
Right.
You know, we wouldn't have seen all the things that we've seen. And so the insurrection would have certainly been on our TV screens, but all the conversation around these things that happened used to just be at the water cooler at work. And if you're working at the water cooler and everyone looks just like you and believes and votes just like you, not much is going to change. But now our water cooler is Twitter and YouTube and Instagram and podcast and, you know, and news articles online, which we didn't have. Like, I just think it's amazing. So I'm hopeful because of those things. Where the church is in that, man, oof.
I feel you on that one.
I don't know. I was saying, I posted recently about Ted Lasso.
I love Ted Lasso.
And Roy Kent is like, we love him in our home.
We love Roy Kent so much. We discovered that show yesterday and we binged the whole thing in one day. My wife and I were like, next. I love Roy Kent. He's great.
It's amazing. It's great. And what he says to Rebecca, who's the woman who owns the team, about not settling.
Yes.
Like, you should just... I'm like, that's how we should be when we go to church. It should be, it should be miraculous, but it's not.
A lot of F words thrown in.
yeah, with a lot of F words.
I love it.
But I think it's going to change. I do, because I think that culture will demand it, and the numbers are clear. People are leaving the church.
Yep.
And they can continue to fight and say that, nope, it has not. But if you really were, and this is, if you were a person who's listening to this, who doesn't really want to be listening to this, someone sent it to you and you're listening because you want to get back to them and tell them all the reasons that I'm BS and Tim's BS and the whole thing's BS.
Yeah.
Just hear me out here. If what you're doing is truly the work of Jesus, Jesus attracted hordes of people to him. Hordes. They were pressing into him when he's walking down the street and the woman who's bleeding touches his robe, right? So they're taking roofs off of places and lowering their friends for healing. If what the church is doing is so on point and so exactly what Jesus asked us to do, the exact kind of way that he asked us to love, we will be drawing more numbers to us in the same radical ways, but we're not. It's the opposite. People are leaving. They're fleeing. And I think that that's the biggest signal to the church that, hey, we have to repent. We have to turn this around.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think it's a bold, difficult thing to do, but I think they'd be amazed at how much more God. I think that's the miracle of the loaves and fishes, is that it's not so much that about everyone was fed and full. It's about everyone participating in the miracle. Everyone's presence made the miracle possible.
Wow.
So the fact that everyone's not invited and everyone's not being fed is because we're kind of like the disciples. When Jesus makes the suggestion, the church is like the disciples, who are just like, no, send them home. All these people, we can't possibly do it. But the truth is that there's no end of love. Yes, you can love the gay community and the trans community and Black communities and Asian communities as hard as you love Jesus. Mm. You absolutely can. There's enough love. It's never going to run dry. Mm. And people are never going to stop pursuing love. So like, you can either decide to be part of that pursuit and love people and not love them and be like, yeah, we love you, but you can't serve. We love you, but you can't get married. That's ridiculous.
Right.
But right. Totally. To love them and to trust that God has enough love for you that you don't have to worry about that. I'm fine. If I get to whatever heaven is, and I'm not so sure it's everything that they told me it was a church, but whatever heaven is, if I get there and just think, and Jesus says, why did you love your daughter? Or why did you love this fabulous person, right? They're gay. Then we've really knelt down to an idol and a demon. And I know that Jesus is neither of those things. God is neither of those things. Mm. So I just think that we need to stop worrying about how we're going to get to heaven.
Yeah.
kingdom is nigh, as Jesus used to say, it's here and now.
Start
practicing the community of heaven right here on earth.
And
the transition is going to be seamless that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that answer. Marcy, it was really great, you know, having you on and sharing your wisdom and so many things for me to even ponder and think about. I appreciate the time and for making it possible. Where can people find you? Where can they follow you? You know, where are you online these days?
I'm only on Instagram, y'all. I'm an old soul. I can only handle so much.
Fair enough. I get it.
I can't do Twitter. I can't do it. So I'm just on Instagram at Black Coffee with White Friends. If you go there, all my other stuff I talk about, and you'll figure out all the other things that I have. But if you go to Black Coffee with White Friends on Instagram or Google that and pull up my blog, you'll find me.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Marcy, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Of course.